Our next guest played over 1,000 games in the National Hockey League for the Leafs, Canadiens, the Stars, Canucks, the Rangers, and finished his career with the Los Angeles Kings. A gentleman who knows a thing or two about, he was traded, I think, 3 times during the course of the season. It's always tough to get dealt. I'm guessing he will be in town in just over a month's time for the face-off for Alzheimer's Pro-Am. Russ Courtnell joins us. Russ, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Russ, you went through it 3 different times, if my memory's correct. You were traded from Toronto to Montreal, and then from Dallas to Vancouver, and then from Vancouver to the Rangers during the season. I'm guessing that first one probably caught you the most off guard. Talk about how it is for players when you get dealt and what a whirlwind it is and how distracting or how positive it can be, I guess, depending on the situation.
Well, the first time you get traded, it's always a shock, and it's tough to leave the team that drafted you, and every player who gets drafted to their team wants to stay with that team and has a dream of finishing his career. So you go through that process, and then the good news is you go to a team that really wants you, and usually the opportunities are greater than where you left. More playing time, maybe you play with better players. And so you get that opportunity to show maybe what you weren't able to do with the team you left, or they were tired of waiting for you to show why they drafted you or whatever, you know. Depends what players are going through, but it's a positive thing. It's just tough to go through the first time.
When you got traded later from Dallas to Vancouver and then again from Vancouver to the Rangers, both times are right near the deadline, were you expecting it?
Yeah, because unfortunately in Dallas, our owner was going through a tough time financially, so he couldn't sign me. And so that started the problem. So it was more financial, and then Bob Gainey and I were having a tough time just because, you know, the expectations were I was going to get signed, and I'd had 2 great years and the 2 best years I'd had, and we just couldn't see, we couldn't get it done. And so Bob traded me to Vancouver, and then I had a couple good years there, and then again, contract situation. It was kind of a funny time then because contracts were going up, and it was difficult for teams to realize, I guess, in hindsight, where salaries were going, and they're nothing like they are today. But anyways, it happened, and got fresh starts, and enjoyed playing where I, you know, the teams I went to.
Russ Courtnell joins us. Russ, as you watch today's game, being a former offensive player, what do you think about the state of today's NHL? Zach Parise told me the other day he thinks coaching's on the verge of ruining hockey because they overcoach, especially too much focus on the defensive side. What do you think?
Wow, good for Zach. Well, the coaches definitely do analyze and reanalyze and overanalyze. I think there's a lot of with the internet and with just instant, you can get tape on any game. You know, they can constantly look at tape and try to figure everything out. And I think Wendell Clark said it best: when you go into the opposing rink, you know exactly what their tendencies are, how they're going to play, and so the teams are so prepared. There's a lot of assistant coaches out there who want to be head coaches and are trying to prove themselves every day. So they probably work way more than they need to. And then every head coach is trying to keep his job. And so you've got a lot of insecurities there. And so if they're not burning the midnight lantern watching video, they're probably feeling like they're not doing enough. They're all obviously very professional, but maybe overdoing it a bit. And they're working just as the players are and earning a really nice living doing it, and they just want to stay in the game as long as possible.
Russ Courtnell joins us. Russ, I want to ask about John Brophy. he coached my brother in minor pro. He had some beauty stories. What's your favorite John Brophy story?
The one I probably can say on the air, we had in he used to come in and just rip the room apart and break sticks and kick the Gatorade bucket over. And so every time he came in between periods, everybody was in the back catcher mode, ready to catch something that was going to get thrown at you, or, you know, a stick that was going to get broken. So everybody was ready for his rant. This one, he came into the dressing room and turned all the lights off, screamed something, slammed the door. And when Barry Solomon yelled at the goalie to turn the lights on, or actually before he left the room, he said, "If you're going to sleep out there, you can sleep in here," and turn the lights off. So it was completely pitch black in the room. And when the goalie turned the lights on, everybody was in the turtle position because they thought they were going to get a stick thrown at them in the dark. He was an interesting guy. He was a character for sure.
Was he ever in a good mood?
Yeah, he was. I mean, there's some guys that do, you know, have fond memories of John. Gary Lehman loved playing for Brough. But he would actually kid around with the guys on off days and stuff, but he was just different than anyone I had ever come across in hockey, and so he was. But he did have a sense of humor, and he sure loved the game. I mean, he was very passionate about the game. It was his life, and he was just crazy though. He was nuts.
Did he ever bring his dogs on the ice in practice when you were there?
He didn't have dogs when we were in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
The dogs you would have seen on the ice in Toronto were Harold Ballard's.
Okay. No, because I know when he coached my brother, he brought dogs on the ice. And actually, one time in a practice, punched out one of his own players. Because, like my brother joked, he says, even at 60 years of age, he might have been the toughest guy on our team.
Well, he didn't wear gear in practice, and he used to tell Ollie Frady to, you gotta clear the front of the net. Now, pretend I'm the other player and cross-check me. And Al's like, I'm like, can't cross-check the guy. And he started screaming, I'm like, cross-check me, cross-check. And Al was just, I couldn't believe how hard he was hitting him with no gear on him. Big, or little brofie. He wasn't a big guy. He stood in there and took it. But, yeah, he was definitely a tough man.
Russ Courtnell joins us. You went from Brophy, then you go into Montreal, and, you know, a lot of people say one of the greatest coaches we've ever had, and Pat Burns. Tell me a little bit about Burns' coaching style, what you liked about him.
Pat was a really good coach and very strict. He demanded a lot of his players. He delegated to his assistant coaches, allowed them to do their jobs, and then he was the boss, and he was in charge, and he was tough to play for. Especially, I had him his first 4 years in the league, so he was just kind of getting his feet wet. So he was the stories that I've told about my experiences with him probably don't relate to guys who had him later in his coaching career, because he started to loosen up a little bit. And he was just not very approachable. I tell the story that I used to walk by his office every morning for 4 years, and I would say, I look in his office, and I say, good morning, Pat, and he'd never respond.
For 4 years?
4 years, every morning.
Oh.
He was pretty brutal the first 4 years. But, you know, I've heard different stories about him as other guys have had him. I got there, I was 23 years old, and I'd already played, I think I was in my fifth year in the league. And so it was almost like being a rookie again, playing for Pat, even though I had played as long as I had played. And he was tough. He used to, he'd call us young guys who were single at the time. He'd call and, make sure we were in for curfew and just hang out. the phone would ring, you'd pick it up and go, hello, hello, and it'd be click on the other end.
So then once you got the call, Russ, would you go out afterwards then to, hey, he knows we're home, now he can go out?
You think in Montreal you can go out past curfew? You're
no.
dreaming.
And that
maybe on Halloween.
That leads to my next question, Russ. Your first 9 years in the NHL, you played in the two biggest hockey markets in Toronto and Montreal. And there was no social media, but there was still a lot of pressure. How difficult was it to play in those markets, or did you love it?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I grew up a Leafs fan, and then obviously to get drafted there and play, my favorite player growing up was Boris Salming. You quickly learn about the media. It's part of everything that goes on in Toronto, and I try and when I went to Montreal, I don't speak French, so I didn't really get affected too much by the media. But toward the last year of my stay in Montreal, got really tough. I had an injury laden season, and then I got traded, and I actually asked to get traded, but I got along, I guess, enough with the media. I probably should have done a better job of being a little bit more outgoing with the media, because they obviously can help and hurt you, but they need to do a job too. And there were some guys that were just out to get any negative story and dig up crap. And especially in Montreal, we were probably half Anglophones and half French. And so they really tried to stir the pot amongst us players, trying to, the political side. And we were having any issues, but they sure tried to make some of the whole French-English thing.
Russ Courtnell joins us, a longtime NHLer, played over 1,000 games, had over almost 750 points in his career. Russ, I know you've been hanging out with a lot of the NHL alumni. You'll be in town for the Alzheimer's Face-Off. You've been a part of those tournaments, and some of the stories you told are kind of the same thing that you'll be able to tell, although maybe a few more R-rated stories of John Brophy inside the dressing room, correct?
Absolutely. We love hanging out with the guys in the locker room. It's really relaxed. You get to know your team over the course of 3 days, and we get to. It's nice because a lot of the guys have questions that you can, it reminds you of things, and you get to tell a lot of stories that they want to hear, and it's fun. It's fun 3 days. It's for a great cause, and they always raise a lot of money.
Russ, where's your speed at? You're one of the fastest guys when you played. I'm guessing you're still probably one of the fastest guys.
Well, I'm closing in on 50, so I've slowed down a bit, quite a bit. I can't even tell you, but it's not like it used to be. But I play about a dozen times a year in these different events, and next week I'll have a little warm up. I'm playing in the Gretzky Fantasy Camp with Wayne and the boys, so at least I'll get on the ice a couple times before I get up there.
You played with a lot of very good players and a lot of fast players. Was Pavel Bure the most explosive player you played with?
Yeah, he was. It was interesting because, when we started the skills competition and we would have the competition on each team, and then the fastest guy would go. Pavel was about the eighth fastest guy on the team, if you can believe that. But I always tell people with the puck, he was probably, he and Denny Savard were probably the two fastest guys with the puck, but definitely Pavel. I mean, that guy, he just picked up speed once he got that puck, and it was tough to get away from him. He was phenomenal.
He was, to me, in his time, maybe the most exciting player in the game.
Absolutely. I got to play with him, and he was probably the most exciting Russian player. I'd say Alexander Mogilny might have been maybe the best in that era. Alexander Mogilny is phenomenal.
Yeah, well, scoring 76 goals 1 year is never a bad season. Russ, last one for you, because I know you spent a lot of time in Vancouver. This just coming down, Roberto Luongo has been traded to the Florida Panthers. That saga has gone on for a long time. Just give me your thoughts on maybe how the organization handled it, and finally now I guess Luongo set free, and for the first time ever, now Tim Thomas can pump his tires and be teammates doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say what happened as far as or what offers he had, you know, they had to trade him back, you know, over the last couple of years. But to tell a player you're going to trade him and then, you know, he doesn't get traded, that's pretty tough, and especially for a guy that has done so much for that organization. And I don't think they handled it very well. They signed Schneider to play and be their number one, and told me that. I mean, that whole thing is just, I'm sure they would totally do it differently if they could do it all over again.
I would think so. Russ, I really appreciate the stories, and we look forward to seeing you in just over a month's time in town for the Alzheimer's Face-Off Tournament, April 11th, 12th, and 13th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.